This is a Deese World production in association with Pants Pending Studios.
Mahalab Keen, everyone. What's up? This is Deese, the host of The Social Hour, and I am here to talk about a brand new show I'm doing called The Dollar Bin Podcast. It is a comic book review show where I take obscure, crappy dollar bin comics and tell you if they really are crappy or if they're hidden gems. Plus, we review a new trade paperback every week. Some kind of obscure, random stuff, and we make fun of Rob Liefeld a lot. So pack up that nerd rage, crawl out of your parents' basement long enough to take a listen to an episode, and use the Wi-Fi that they pay for in the cell phone plan that you're on. New episodes every Friday at DeeseComedy.com.
You're now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
Hey, we're cheap and we're crackers. Nabisco, fuck you.
Get ready for the social hour.
Live from Deese World Studios in Spokane, Washington. This is The Social Hour. On today's show, comedian and voice of Hello Kitty, Sonis Stevens. And now your host. Hello Kitty is also the name of his sex tape, Deese Cassius.
Mahalab Keen, everyone, welcome to the show. This is The Social Hour. I am Deese. Thanks for coming around for another great episode. We have an international show today. We had to schedule some weird times for this show. My guest is coming in all the way from Japan. We had like a 12-hour time difference. It was awkward figuring out when we were going to make this happen, but we did. Sonis Stevens coming to the show. She is a comedian. Voice actor. She is the voice of Hello Kitty, among many other things. So we're going to talk to her in just a second, guys. Before we get into that, some announcements. The show, The Social Hour, is going back to once a week every Wednesday. Pandemic, I think, officially over. I'm not sure. But it's officially over for me because I am back on the road moving and shaking and doing comedy again. Regularly. So I need some extra free time, which means this show is going back to once a week. We might get some bonus episodes here and there, but for now, we're going to go back to Wednesdays. You're still going to get the Dollar Bin Podcast, new episodes of that every Friday. Check that out. It is a comic book review show I do. It is a video version on YouTube where you get some bonus goodies. And I review some old crappy dollar bin comics. I'm sorry, I said crappy. They're dollar bin. They might be great. Some of the ones we reviewed are. Some definitely crappy. But check that out, guys. That's been a fun show. Although a brief hiatus, Some Imperfections is going to be coming back. We're going to be doing that about once a month and just going one big episode for you. And the Social Minute is going to be sporadic now. Instead of every Monday, we're going to be just giving you that as we can. Again, I'm just busy again. But I'm going to try to give you new episodes semi-regularly, hopefully a couple times a month at least still. Lastly, guys, big announcement. We have a new sponsor for the show, Blue Spot Comics. Blue Spot Comics, you can find them on Instagram at Blue Spot Comics or Blue Spot Comics on Facebook. They are your resource for new and back issue comic books, rare variants, Star Wars collectibles, other toys, classic gaming equipment, and more. So check them out, follow them, let them know that The Social Hour sent you, and you'll get an extra 10% off your first order, guys. So check it out. Great resource. They've got all sorts of stuff online. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook and see what they can do for you. All right, guys, that's it. We're going to get into it with our guest today, all the way from Japan. Please give it up for Sonis Stevens. Every time I do Zoom, I swear the settings are different. It's something different every time.
So what are you, what settings do you use to record a podcast?
Well, I use Audacity, and then, I mean, it just records, and I'm running into my mixer and everything. My mic is, it just seems like every time it's like, oh, we got to do the audio here. But the sound coming back is different and on your computer or on Zoom settings. It's crazy.
I have a Steinberg interface and a Shure microphone, and with the MacBook Pro, cannot hook it up to Audacity. So
really?
I'm like,
oh, great.
No idea.
So Sonus, just so you know, there's I tell all my first time guests, there's no FCC, so you can do or say whatever you want. I don't edit for content. So anything that we just interview, we'll do about probably about 45 minutes to an hour, is that, if that works for you. And
that's great.
Then it's all pre-recorded. This comes out I believe in about sometime in mid-March. So I'll tell you exactly, just so you know, if you have anything you want to specifically promote, it will be out on the 11th.
On the 11th. Okay.
So there you go. And let's see. So just for my notes, comedy, and you are in
Tokyo.
Are you in Tokyo?
Well, just outside of Tokyo, a little surfer community.
Okay. And you also were the voice of Hello Kitty. Is that right?
Yeah, still am technically.
Okay, all right, still are.
Technically,
okay.
Yeah. I mean, there's not a lot of English Hello Kitty work that comes up, but yeah.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Ted is my main thing.
Ted, and that is... like the TED Talks thing, or you're saying?
Yeah,
oh,
like
okay.
The TED Talks thing.
Got it.
I spoke at TED and 4 different TEDx events, and I train TED speakers for a living.
Oh, nice. Okay. Maybe you can help me out. I'm doing a keynote speech at a Libertarian Party event in a couple weeks. So I got to prepare for that. I haven't done shit to prepare for that. I probably should.
And you're running for mayor too, yeah?
I am running for mayor of Spokane. That's right. Yeah. I feel Spokane needs some new representation. And I moved here from LA about 10 years ago, and I love this city and I want to make it a better place. So although mayor in Spokane is a nonpartisan position, I do a lot of events for the Libertarian Party. I don't align with any political party at all. I think they all have good ideas and bad ideas. Some of them a lot more good or bad ones than others, but I think they all have some good ones, and I think they all have some fucking stupid ones. So
is that why you're doing the keynote?
I got a guy who's helping me run my political platform. He's also does some comedy, and he is a pretty, I'd say, a moderate libertarian, and I've done some comedy for their events before. Joe Jorgensen, who was the presidential candidate for the Libertarian Party last election, I spent a day with her. She was on the show, came over to my house, did the podcast, did an event for her. So they kind of have me just do events and talk, and talk about the shutdown in Washington State. We had a big shutdown because of COVID and stuff, so how that affected our comedy and more. So what about you? You're in Tokyo. By the way, guys, welcome to the show. This is the Social Hour. You know what's going on. We're talking to a comedian, a voice of Hello Kitty, and much, much more, Sonus Stevens. Sonus, thank you for coming on and joining us this morning for you. You're in Tokyo. It's a whole different day. Is it? It's tomorrow.
Yeah, it is tomorrow. I am in the future. So if you want to know what it looks like, it's very bright, sunny, a bit windy. The winning lottery numbers are 4, 17, 28.
Yeah, got it. So it's who wins the World Series? It's good to know. Are we still, is America still number one? Tell us we're still making it. I don't know if we've been number one for a while.
To take a look at where the U.S. stands politically at the moment, you know, like across the world. Like, what is the impression of America? Are you guys still number one?
Yeah. What metrics are we using to measure America?
Metrics? You guys don't even use the metric system. You guys are like, true. Hey, we're going to leave England, but we're still going to use our measurements based on some old king in England's foot size.
Yeah.
Metrics.
It's so funny that the whole world, you know, I mean, America like boasts about how we're the best and, you know, typical ugly American, so proud of whatever. And then like the rest of the world is like metric. It's way easier. We're like, nah, fuck that shit. Like we're going to do what we want. Yeah. We buy our gas in gallons and we like it that way. You know,
I'm going to start calculating in furloughs, you know?
Right. Yeah. I measure in fathoms only. So fathoms and fortnights, that's how I measure things. If I can't measure it in one of those units of measurement, I don't want to talk about it. So,
yeah, I would like to be the knight of my own fort too. I think that sounds like a lot of fun.
You can, you know, you just create a fort and knight yourself.
Oh man, that'd be awesome. I mean, it'd be totally different from what I do now. I mean, night and day different, but
no pun intended.
Pun totally intended. But it's really hard to say, you know, I mean, what country in the world is like, yeah, we're not number one. We're not number one. Nobody says that. I mean, is there a country that would say that?
Uruguay.
That was just tell me more about that, Deez.
Not that there's anything wrong with Uruguay, but listen, any place that like a whole, when you're a country that has never manufactured a car and doesn't have a PF Chang's, like you're probably not number one. That's all I'm going to say. I've been to Uruguay. I'm not saying it's a horrible place. I'm not saying don't go, and I'm not saying I don't love those people. I'm just saying there's no way they can even make a case for number one.
Even Yugoslavia's like, well, we're not Yugoslavia anymore. We're the former Yugoslavia, but at least we had the Yugo.
Right. Yeah. Right. When Croatia's like, fuck you, Uruguay. We're better than you. You're like, it's time to take a long look in the mirror. It's gut check time at that point. you make a moped, a something, anything. You know, I guarantee they've never manufactured a single car in the history of their country. So.
Someone's going to write into this show and be like, well, you know, actually the national export of Uruguay is number two pencils.
Right. I hope so. Hey, listen, if they have something there, if they have something I don't know about, I'm happy to listen. I hope people are proud of being from Uruguay, but I'm going to say they don't have a lot going on for them.
Every country thinks that they, you know, I'm surprised that you picked Uruguay as the one. Is there some sort of connection there?
No, I don't know. That was just the weird. That was just the first thing.
What's a country I've never been to and I've never met anyone from?
Well, number one on their exports goods is soybeans. I don't know how much you can get out of soybeans. But I'm guessing
heck
it doesn't.
A lot.
It, I don't know that one.
Wait, soybeans. That is like the most amazing thing you could possibly have. Soybean oil. You can fuel a car. You can fuel your body.
They got to make
can
a car.
Your skin.
They don't even have a car. They don't have cars.
Yeah, but you can't have a car running without soybean oil.
Well, that's true. So they, I mean, they're, okay. Wood. Some beef.
I used to have this friend down in Hawaii who had it had like a 1984 Mercedes Benz because that was a model where you could run it off of soybean oil.
Really?
He'd also he was out on the big island of Hawaii, and he would stop by McDonald's like, what are we doing at McDonald's? He's like, oh, hang on, and he picks up a vat of French fry oil. Like, what are you gonna do with that? Goes back to the house, filters it all through this thing. Car is running off of French fry oil.
Just need it. Well, yeah. Well, that was, you know, that was
everywhere we went. Smelled like tortillas.
I mean, that's for me. That sounds great. I love that idea.
Well, I've lived in Japan for more than 24 years, and I know that Japan thinks they're number one.
And again, it depends on what metrics we're using here, Sonus, but I think Japan, it was probably doing pretty well. Japan, you know, despite their very checkered pasts, Japan and Germany are doing gangbusters.
They're checkered pass. It's like, well, it's my move and I get to jump over you. King me. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. We have an emperor here.
Right. Yeah.
What is that? Checkered pass. You're like, well, you know, other than that, you know, little trip they took down racism lane.
Yeah.
Following. Who is that guy with the mustache again?
Yeah. The little misstep in the early 40s. But, you know, whatever.
It's changed dramatically since then.
I don't know. Listen, America was still hanging black people back then, so I don't think we were doing that much better. Like, the last legal lynching in America was in the 80s, so let's not...
Or last summer, yeah.
Well, I mean legal.
Well, it's like decriminalizing drugs. You shouldn't really do it, but you're not going to get in trouble for it either.
Yeah, there's definitely parts of the South where that's still, not frowned upon.
One of the churches that I went to when I was a teenager, it was this second of the three churches I went to. I brought my friend to church. My friend and I brought my friend, and the youth minister comes over and says, who brought that boy over there? I'm like, oh yeah, he's our friend. Well, you know, black people can't go to heaven.
Wait, was it a Mormon church?
No, it was a Baptist church.
What? Wait, hold on. Baptist is... I have been to some good old-fashioned charismatic Southern Baptist churches, and it is... They would tell you that white people aren't going to heaven. No, they wouldn't tell you that. There's just only black people at these churches, usually.
Well, they're like, don't bring that boy back here again. I'm like, oh, no, we will not be bringing that boy back here again, because we're never coming back.
They said they None can't go us. To heaven, huh?
Yeah. So, and it's so funny because I was just talking with him. And you know, every time we catch up on the phone, it's like, yeah, remember that time we went to church?
Jesus.
Boy, that's... it's been years, and it's like, wow, we still remember that as one of the most like intense experiences.
Yeah, that is pretty wild
of our
to think that
teenagehood. You know? How impactful.
Where was that at?
Florida.
Well, okay, that makes sense. Florida.
Yeah, that makes sense.
What? So you've been in Tokyo or in Japan for 24 mm-hmm. years. What took you to Japan originally?
Well, you know those little girl dreams. Oh, well, maybe not you, but I mean, I had my. I don't care how you choose to identify these. You're good either way. I always wanted to be a ninja.
Is that genuinely you wanted to be ninja? Did you achieve that dream, Sonas, of becoming a ninja? Or I guess
wearing all black today, aren't I?
That's true. I suppose if you're a ninja, you can't reveal that.
Actually, my darling is.
You're what? You really?
Yeah, like, yeah. My husband a couple years ago, he was on. I was going to say the Japanese version of American Ninja Warrior, but
is that just,
America
is that
never just, had ninjas? So yes.
Is that just called Ninja Warrior at that point?
And so it's like you can't even put Japanese in front of it. It's a show called Kurobi, and he competed on it. And
oh, wow.
One of the things they kept shouting out the entire time he was on, you know, he was going through the obstacle course. And it's not just obstacles. You also have to do math problems. So mind you, you have to jump up 3-4 meter high walls. And do you remember the math equation you had at the beginning of that?
See, that's why Japan is a contender for number one. Because Americans can barely put their carts back in the corral at the shopping, you know, at the grocery store, you know, without they, you can tell someone what year they're born and they can't figure out the math on how old they are. That's why Asians are better than us, because they're doing math problems and ninja shit. That's amazing.
Oh, yeah, he was amazing. They kept screaming out the whole entire time, like, and Yuji Kitano is almost 40 years old. This is like 4 years ago. And he's like, he's the oldest contestant ever. You know, it's like, wow, how old are these other people? Then the real American Ninja Warrior champion came over and made his attempts.
Yeah, how did that go?
I said attempts.
Yeah, didn't work out so well, huh?
That math is hard, yo.
I failed seventh grade math, like in the 11th grade. So, believe me, I'm well aware. I'm not, the public school system in, America definitely, proved itself to be inefficient with me and many others, I think so.
Really?
Oh man, the public. Did you go to school here?
Did you go to school?
Well, did you? But I don't know if you went to school in Japan or in America. Because I mean, you look young. Where if you were in Japan for 24 years, I assume you went to high school there.
Oh, I love it. I love talking to American comedians. Like, what did your parents do? And it's great. You know, I look super young because, you know, like all the Japanese women wander around like, oh, guess how old I am? I'm like, I don't know, like 40. And they're like, I'm 75, you know. Jeez. And it's just like, you know, as a 20-year-old, you think, well, I don't know what the difference is in age. Now people walk around like, oh, guess how old I am? Like same age as me, if not a couple years older. the secret to beautiful young skin, the Asian secret here in Japan is, it's not all the lotions, it's the hot humidity.
Oh, okay.
This is how I stay so young looking. No, I don't look like I'm a Gen Xer, but I am.
Oh, all right. So you did go to school in America and then moved to, Japan, huh?
Funny thing. I did not go to school in America. So.
Oh, okay. Where did you, well, tell us. Where'd you grow up? How'd you end up in Japan then?
So, okay. Well, so I did actually eventually end up in school in America. So we grew up in the streets. Well, like we weren't like homeless. I mean, we lived in a car, so we were like this far from the streets.
Oh, okay.
And my room was in the back. It was the hatchback. Like childhood's great. Like, have you ever tried doing puzzles at home when your home is a car doing 40? Like, almost done. Almost done.
Yeah. That's a little more difficult.
A little more difficult. So, you know, we checked in and out of school systems. And you know, by the time I ended up in a home-ish environment when I was 13, I was always really surprised because, you know, all these kids would just complain about, you know, how hard the math exams were. I'm like, dude, I haven't been to school my entire life. Like maybe check into a school district for a couple of weeks. But these math problems are easy. Like I think math exams must've been written by poor people.
But
like you got two apples, but five people in your car. Oh, that's not written by rich people.
I thought you were like, just calling poor people dumb because they were writing easy math problems.
No. Like rich people say, oh, I'm so bad at math. I'm like, no, you just had the wrong childhood.
Yeah.
Like I know exactly how many apples I am not eating.
Yeah.
I know exactly what point I'm going to run out of gas and have to walk to my part-time job.
Yeah. So you ended up in Japan. You moved there to become a ninja, and you may or may not have become one, but your husband is. Yeah. Well, I mean, what were you doing when you first moved to Japan?
What was I doing? I was on my way to Harvard for my MBA. Yeah. The girl who didn't attend school till she was 13 was like, I'm going to go to Harvard. But that was before you had to cure cancer. Remember back in the day when our expectations were much lower of ourselves?
Yeah, like get out of bed before noon.
Yeah. It's like, oh, wow, that person, I don't know, they can, you know, tie their shoe. Good job.
Yeah.
You know? Nowadays, if you're 9 years old and you haven't published your first book, everybody's like, ooh, what a loser.
Right. Yeah, right? See, yeah. I mean, anyone can publish a book now, though. You can just throw it on Amazon. Yeah, it's easy, though. You just write anything. Write some vampire love story in the future and throw it on Amazon. You're fine.
Your parents will hire an editor for you who will make sure that vampire is spelled correctly each time.
Yeah, it's stimulus checks got to go somewhere.
Right? Yeah. It's like, you know, when you and I were kids, it's like, oh, man. You know, and one of my speakers and I, Monica, she and I were talking. I was like, wow, you know, these kids these days, they're doing everything. And she's like, Sinesse, when you and I were kids, we were just trying to survive.
Yeah.
There weren't any like internet references. I was begging my mom for math books in the back of the Salvation Army.
Yeah.
And like everything you can get, you need to know, you can learn online for free. Like internet, that must have been awesome.
No, make it so much easier. Yeah. Like the Dewey Decimal System or like Encyclopedia Britannica and crap like that. Yeah. I am amazed at what kids get to grow up with now. I was over at my buddy's house, another comedian. We were doing some shows a while back, and I went over to pick him up. And he's, you know, littler than I am. He's responsible, though. He got married young and has kids. And we go downstairs, and his whole downstairs, like a room the size of my living room, is just covered with just Legos, giant Lego sets strewn everywhere. And I'm looking at him like, dude, I go, is this all your kids? He's like, yeah, yeah, they love this stuff. And I'm like, if you add up what all these Legos cost, there is more money wrapped up in these Legos than my parents spent on me my entire life, and I am including food and board. Like, that's like, there is 100%, I guarantee it.
Room and board, yeah, yeah.
Like there's, this is like, I there's no way I ate more food than it we have in Legos right here. I know it.
Yeah, it's pretty. It's pretty amazing to see what opportunities people get. You know, I was like getting, I hate puzzles to this day. I hate puzzles because, you know, we'd pick up these puzzles at the Salvation Army. I'd be doing them in the back of the car and, you know, inevitably I could never finish. I mean, either my mom always hit speed bumps, but I found out 2 years ago when I went back home to my mom's living in a little tiny studio apartment. She's a hoarder. And I love her, but she just collects everything. I'm like, Mom, do you need this napkin from Disney from 1983? It's all wrinkled. I must have it.
Like, yeah, 83 is the best year for the napkin.
Yeah. Oh, we go through this whole process. I take her through, like, I KonMari'd. Well, I was KonMari'ing before KonMari was ever even born. It's like, you know, when you live in a car, you only get to keep three things that spark joy, and two of them had to be spark plugs.
Yeah.
So for, you know, I get there and be like, all right, we've got three piles. Like it, love it, leave it. Let it go.
Yeah.
And she's like, okay. And I'm like, come on, this Mickey Mouse pen. She's like, I love it. I said, well, it's got one ear broken. Well, then it's Goofy. just going through it. I'm like, I found this puzzle and it's still here from last time I was here. Like it, love it, let it go. And she's like, love it. I'm going to make a game. I'm going to put all the pieces around this apartment building and everyone's going to find it like a scavenger hunt. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, but it says here on the post-it note on the front, three pieces missing. She's like, I know, that makes it so much better. Like, now I know why I hated puzzles.
Yeah. No.
they were never complete.
Yeah. They're never complete. Just, yay. There's two things that were never complete. Puzzles in my childhood. Look at that.
Write that down. Can I borrow that?
Look at that.
Oh, geez. Yeah, yeah. It's like, oh, no wonder I always have these feelings of just not being enough.
Right. Yeah, there's always just some pieces missing. Just an edge. So, there's an edge somewhere I just can't find.
No wonder I'm not an edgy comic, you know?
Yeah,
it's like, oh, she's just so middle of the road, so vanilla, just very clean and not edgy at all. And I look at edgy comics and I think, dang, I wish I had that edge. I wish I had a sharp corner to me.
Right. Maybe you'll find it in between your mother's couch cushions or something.
So the question was, how did I end up in Japan? Yeah. So I came here for a year to study Japanese and I fell in love with the country and never left.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, had you met your husband before you left, or is that why you decided to stay, or you just loved it and decided to stay?
No, I just really enjoyed what I was doing. I enjoyed who I was becoming here.
Yeah.
Like if I had gone down that track and gone back to the United States and, like, you know, even for university, I put myself through school. You know, I graduated in 3 years. I was like, I'm in, I'm out. Let's just do this and let's make some money and never be poor again.
Sure.
I have this feeling I would have not become the person that I am today had I gone down that route. Being here, I was able to more, you know, sort of like do some more self-exploration, figure out who I am. I became a surfer.
Nice.
And tapped back into that childhood thing. I was on tour for 15 years in front of audiences of 1,000 plus and getting to do what I call theater therapy by working through a lot of the stuff that I went through or a lot of the conflicts that a lot of people go through. I was in a show where we talked about family communications and connecting with, you know, like, we are all the same in our hearts and our tears taste the same and how we we go on these different journeys every week on a weekend on stage. And I was like, wow, this is really healing for me. And then I had a radio show and a TV show, and I just kept going and going. I just really liked who I was becoming here. And, you know, it is kind of like Peter Pan land. I never have to grow up. Like I wander around the world in a hula hoop for, you know, a decade. And I just really enjoyed that. And then I met my husband. I usually don't say the word husband, but it's so much easier for other people to understand, because to me, husband sounds so ownershipy.
Like, sure, like, yeah.
So I usually call him my darling. And everyone's like, is that your son? Like, no, no, that would be very illicit. yeah. And he was living in New Zealand from the time he was 16. So we basically just crossed over in the air, and he was doing his thing. We met in Thailand, of all places.
Oh, wow.
And he came to Japan to be with me. Yeah.
Nice. Is he Japanese, or is he, what is he, where's, what's his origin?
What, I asked him that same question when we met too. I had no idea when we first met.
Yeah.
I was on this big personal journey. I was in a made for TV horror story marriage for about 3 months. It was horrific. And I decided to spend the next year in this journey of return to Senescence plus Alpha, everything that I was and everything that I had always wanted to be. And I used to be an avid rock climber. So I went back out to Thailand again and did some climbing, met some amazing women. And of course, if you're a woman and you have all your own ropes and carabiners and all the gear, all the other backpacking women are like, yes, let's all climb together, because I just brought my shoes. I'm like, that's cool. I got it all. And we climbed together. And then over Christmas, New Year's, I'm like, I don't have any plans. And I just messaged all my girlfriends there. And anybody still there? Everyone said, no, I'm not here, except one. Ness. Her name was Ness. And Ness said, yeah, I'm still here, but I ran out of money, so I'm camping on the beach. I'm like, well, I like a shower, so I'm going to get a bungalow, but I'll see you down there. And I walked down to the beach with my pink hula hoop in hand. I was like, Ness, how's it going? And this guy comes out of a tent just next door to hers, and he's got long dreadlocks down to his waist, six-pack abs. And he's like, is that a hula hoop? I'm like, yeah. Can I try? I'm like, yeah. And he could hoop. I'm like, are you half Japanese? And he's like, what are you? I have Janeo. I'm not half Japanese. I'm not so pleased with that question. It turns out he's full Japanese. He's from Aizu Wakamatsu, Fukushima, which is in the Tohoku region. But he's been living in New Zealand for most of his life as a rugby player, outdoor guide, and a physiotherapist.
Oh, wow. Yeah, and, busy guy. So, I mean, are you fluent in Japanese then?
You know, I like to think so. But then I realized recently I haven't spoken Japanese in like 9 years.
Oh, really?
I live here, but all of my work is in English, because I coach TED speakers, and most of them are around the world. I have maybe a couple here in Japan, but almost all my clients are in the U.S. The comedy I do, most of it's in English.
What about like general day-to-day, going to the store, having work done on your car, stuff like that? I mean, how's that?
Yeah, well, again, I grew up in a car, therefore I do not own a car now. I never want to go back to that lifestyle again. Everybody's like, oh my gosh, minimalist lifestyle. I'm like, that's my whole life. the foundation of every good relationship is cement.
Yeah.
We ride our bicycles everywhere.
Okay.
Yeah, well, shopping bikes, little basket in the front.
For whoever fixes your bike chain when it breaks. I mean, interactions day to day. I mean, everyone else there is Japanese.
Yeah.
Are you?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like,
I mean,
how does that work with the language then?
Oh, well, day-to-day stuff. Yeah, I mean.
Okay, yeah.
But here's the thing. Like, you don't. Oh, actually, there is a difference. When I was in the States, I thought this was really interesting. I was at the airport, about to catch a bus. And this is when I was in California. I think it was in San Francisco. And the bus driver and this lady, you know, waiting for the bus, were just having this conversation. Like, oh, yeah, my son, he's been on drugs and he's doing this and he's doing that. Oh, ma'am, that's just a hard one. You know, I think, yeah, I'm with you. I'm like, dang, these people are talking about like their husbands leaving them, their wives leaving them, the drugs, all this stuff. And I'm standing there going like, am I allowed to stand next to these people having such an intimate conversation about their lives? I mean, And she gets on the bus, like, oh, are you going to the bus? I'm like, oh, so how do you know the bus driver? She's like, I don't know him. I just met him now. <I'm> like, what? This is the amount of intimate conversations. In Japan, the most intimate our conversations get are, oh, the weather's beautiful today.
Oh, so there's not a lot of very long. What about friends and stuff? I mean, do you have friends who are Japanese there, or just is it very? Is it just not that?
Again, the conversation pretty much goes like, "Oh, how's the weather? Oh, it's very chilly today." You know, like there's we don't talk about neuroscience. I was listening to you, and I think his name is Grant, and I was listening to your book club conversation. I'm like, I would love to have a conversation like that. Just sit down and when I talk to my Japanese friends, I'm like, oh my gosh, I just read this really interesting article about neuroscience. And I was wondering about, you know, have you ever tried transcranial direct stimulation? And like, the weather is very nice today.
Are they all robots? And is it just androids? Will it have been programmed in Japan? And what?
It's like the Stepford country.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of like, you know, it's also different culturally, you know, it's a very high context. So it's not what you say specifically, it's reading the air in between. So you don't express your emotions. You don't express explicit instructions. There's no confrontation. We probably wouldn't have a conversation about neuroscience because you might feel differently about it.
That seems very interesting for such a smart and technologically advanced and scientifically advanced culture that they wouldn't have those kind of conversations, because it makes me wonder how they get to the places they are in certain fields, which is excelling above other countries, without having those open conversations, or what motivates people to get into those fields there.
Well, it's a very specific, you know, when you're a specialist, there's no generalist. Like, you and I could probably have a conversation about any field, you know, get in a conversation with an engineer where you're like, oh, you know, I read this interesting article about XYZ. On the other hand, here, it's a very specialist culture, I find. I mean, not saying that's for everyone, but I find in general, if you work in robotics, you only know robotics.
Sure.
There's very little of going from that to, oh, and by the way, let's discuss the the paintings here, or the calligraphy. You know, it's not a lot of breadth to it. And of course, you know, the people who live in my neighborhood, they're probably more specialists in their fields, I would say. Yeah.
So,
I mean, that's not for everybody. I mean, there are some really, like, there are amazing smart people here. It's not that. I'm just saying, like, as far as.
So is like, for instance, if they don't have those type of conversations, are there like great art museums in Japan? If people, it seems like, do they just walk through and silently look at it and not comment? I mean, how I'm just so curious as how that works. If there's not as much engagement that way, you know.
Well, it's not that there's a lack of intelligence, because that's not it. There's, you know,
sure.
I stereotype, like,
yeah,
they're not.
Yeah, that's.
It's not the lack of intelligence. It's there's not a necessity to express how one feels or what one thinks about a certain. If we were to take a look at a painting, we would probably say, ah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we wouldn't say that's nice. We wouldn't say that moves me. We wouldn't say anything like it. We just look at it and go, ah.
How interesting.
And it's a very telepathic communication style. So maybe that's something that we all need to learn from, is that telepathic communication style. Like, can we really read into what the other person's saying, looking at their micro expressions and not having to say everything explicitly?
Yeah, that's a really interesting, they're more, maybe more intuitive, and maybe that's, maybe that's a smarter, indicative of a smarter culture who's able to be more, it's a higher EQ and understanding what is necessary to be spoken and speaking when it matters, so your words have weight instead of just talking to hear yourself talk like a lot of other countries do.
Like raising my hand right there.
As we're doing now.
It doesn't make for necessarily a great podcast when you're like,
Yeah, right? Yeah. That's
Yeah.
We're the podcast is just us looking at different art pieces and going, no one can see the art. They just have to guess what we're looking at by the how emphatic our mms are.
And if they can hear our heads nodding, you know, that's Aizuchi of nodding your head in agreement. We'll just go like, maybe you can hear it if the headphones hit the microphone. Or...
Yeah, like, wow, that must have been a good one.
But when we get back, we'll just, you know, when the episode is over, we bow and you just hear our heads hitting the microphone as though it's like a temple bell, like,
mm. Yeah, and then, yeah, but then everyone's like, they wait around for like 10 minutes and it's just silence, like, I'm not sure if it's over or not. when do we stop listening?
And they would be polite. They would never turn the off button because they'd hate to interrupt. It's like doing comedy here, like the same way too, is everybody's like, oh, am I allowed to laugh now?
You know? So that's brings to an interesting question. Is there like, now I know you do comedy a lot online, so to, you know, an American audience, but is there like a comedy scene in Japan for Japanese people?
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. There's so much to go with this. This is awesome. Dee Soon's like, oh, thank goodness she's excited about another thing. Like, how many things can she be that excited about?
Hopefully all. That's good.
Pretty enthusiastic. So Japanese, there was a comedian who approached me and a couple of other members from the Stand Up Tokyo comedy group, American guy. And he's like, I'm going to, you know, put together a Japanese comedy show. Can you help put this together? Cause I want to teach Japanese people what stand-up comedy is. I'm like, oh, cause that's what's been missing. Has been some guy from America to come in here and teach Japanese what stand-up is. You know, the only reason why we don't have stand-up comedy here is because, you know, Japanese are too short to reach the microphone. Like, what is it? You know, like, that is not our issue. There are so many amazing forms of comedy. And one of my favorite is Bakugo. And when I ran for Miss Chigasaki back in the day, which is the town I live in.
Okay.
I wrote a Rakugo style story. I was the first foreigner to run for Miss Chigasaki. It was also the first year where they told everybody after the contest to please go home and they'll mail us all the results.
Did you win?
No. Oh. But according to a couple of people who ran into me on the streets, they're like, I'd never seen you before, but wanted to tell you, half of us really wanted you to win and the other half were like, we can't have a foreigner represent our town.
I mean, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, there's only three Miss Chigasakis and one out of three would have been really bad odds, you know?
Yeah.
The plight of the immigrant. And it's like, Sinus, you're so white. I'm like, no, like, I am also an immigrant, you know? They sit on a cushion and it's this magical form where they sit in front of a short mic, just like my microphone here is very short. And they tell these amazing, fantastic stories using just a fan and a towel as all of the props that they need. And they go into these fantastic characters and it's just phenomenal. So they've got a deep history of beautiful comedy. And then they've got like Abbott and Costello style, like, you know, two person comedy teams. And, you know, that's manzai and it's absolutely hilarious. Having one person stand in front of a microphone is not culturally, you know, something that they've traditionally had. Sure. There are some groups coming up and the foreign scene, which brings in a lot of Japanese comedians as well, because a lot of Japanese comedians want to do comedy in English and do Edinburgh and they want to do that kind of stand-up scene as well.
Yeah,
so there is definitely blooming areas of stand-up comedy, but the traditional Japanese comedy is hilarious.
Yeah, okay. So there is, it's not the same. It's slightly different. I assume even people who want to do stand-up comedy, like even if you spoke Japanese and wanted to do stand-up comedy to, you know, a Japanese audience, culturally it's so different and also... some things I assume just don't translate exactly. So it'd be difficult to take an act that's in American and, you know, just try to translate that to Japanese. And I feel like a lot of it just wouldn't work the same. You can't just do that necessarily.
Oh, not at all. And vice versa. That is an interesting point, Deez. You know, when we're, the translation doesn't necessarily work. The Japanese comedy definitely gives audience cues as to when to participate because it's a very polite culture. Yeah. They will never interrupt you. And, you know, to obviously interject with laughter would be awkward.
Yeah. Sure.
To interject with clapping or guffawing, like, you know, international audiences might do, would just be an embarrassment for not just the person in the audience, but also for the person on stage.
Yeah.
Because they've honed their craft. They are masters. And I find that fascinating. So when you see Japanese comedy, there are all these cues that tell the audience it's okay to laugh here.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So God, it's so interesting. It's just so different, you know. I mean, it's funny when you think that there's just these, you know, culturally it's so different everywhere in the world. You know, it's not just, you can't just do stand-up comedy necessarily. So, but how?
Well, when you come, we'll take you out to the. I mean, there are a lot of people who are returnees to Japan or have been abroad and come back, or they really enjoy watching English stand-up comedy, so they come out to the shows and. They know how it rolls, but often, like, I've had an audience member who is like, am I allowed to laugh at this? You're talking about your dead dad. Is this okay?
Is this funny? Is this supposed to be funny? Yeah.
Can I raise my hand? I have a question. I don't understand that vocabulary word.
So, well, let's a couple things I want to talk about before we let you go for the night. When did you start comedy?
That's funny. That is a question I never answer.
Why not? Is it a secret?
It's a secret. No, it's not a secret. It's just, you know, I think it's taken so many iterations. You know, when I started off back in, back in university, I was with SAC Comedy Theater in Orlando doing improv. And so going from the improv world and going into stage and then writing for Fox and then writing for NHK and then being on TV and then all this stuff, it's taken such different forms. Between from improv to stand up to being on stage to coming back and then doing this. So like my stand up career has not been super long. It's only been a couple of, I think I'm having like my 2-year anniversary.
Oh, wow.
But I've done in so many other forms.
Sure.
And
yeah.
That it sort of just has a relationship and connection.
Yeah, I can relate to that. I in some form or fashion, I've been doing comedy for 15 years, but it's been different things. I started out in stand-up and then went to writing and sketch comedy and improv for a long time and then went back to stand-up and then, you know, it's like, you know, it's always something, but it just, yeah, things change. It evolves, you know. But honestly, I'm easily bought. I'm a cheap whore. I just go where whoever's going to pay me the most. And it turns out, like, right now it's been stand-up. It's been really great. So I'm like, I'll just do that until I have an opportunity to do something else I like that, you know, in comedy that pays me more. So.
Yeah. That's the interesting thing about this skill set is that all of the skills connect so well together. They're different, various skills.
Yeah.
But once you start mastering a little bit of each of them, pulling them together and bringing them into your next incarnation of what you create.
Yeah.
And when I decided to get into stand-up, I came into this because I really wanted to talk about social issues that were important and also make them palatable and relatable. So I've spoken at TED and TEDx 4 different times as well. And some of the messages that I have, like around baby loss, it's really important.
Sure.
And I wanted to find a way, how can I communicate this in a way that's funny, that will get people to create a shift and change in their consciousness? Not that I'm working through things on an emotional level, like, oh, I need comedy as therapy. I don't think that's the case, but I do believe working through the comedic process supports us in processing our emotions.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. But getting into this, I'd already worked through a lot of that in therapy. And I thought, what's a better way for me to to convey this message? What's a better way to work through this on societal's level so that it can be received? When I do comedy about loss or grief or death or not that all my members like, oh my God, your material must be so dark. but I do. I talk about homelessness. I talk about growing up homeless. I talk about poverty. But there's not a point at which you look at me and think, oh, that poor girl, she grew up so homeless and poor, you know. It's how do we create change and transformation and processing and healing, not just for ourselves, but the audience members, one joke, one idea, one laugh at a time.
Being able to take something that's very uncomfortable and present it in a palatable form and make people laugh is a great skill set, and very, I think one of the best things about comedy is, you know, being able to take things that most people find, you know, unappealing to just talk about in day-to-day life, and then finding a way to talk about it and, you know, make people comfortable and laugh about it.
Yeah. That's the beauty. That's what we get to do as performers and comedians and writers.
Yeah.
What an amazing gift.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it is great. It is I'm glad it is coming back around so we can do it again. I mean, you do it more online, I guess, so that's, you know, a little better for you. The other thing I did want to ask you about is you are the voice of Hello Kitty. Is that correct?
That's right. I'm the English voice for Hello Kitty in Asia and Europe. It used to be around the world, but at one point they were going to put together a Hello Kitty movie in the United States, and they cast somebody in California.
Which
I was like, you know, it's okay. No, actually, I'm okay with that. Actually, that's really interesting because everyone's like, oh my gosh, you must have been so mad about that. Like, no, I've been doing her voice for more than 20 years.
Yeah.
Wow, and that's a long time. It's somebody else's turn.
How did you score that? I mean, is it through is there like an American company that has the rights to her in America that you work for? Or is it a company in Japan that licenses, you know, does the recordings and licenses it out to, you know, American distributors?
Well, Sanrio is the Hello Kitty company.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they would say we're just Sanrio, but, you know, she's one of our characters. And they put out a casting call, and I had just quit my job and decided to become a full-time performer. Mm-hmm. And it was my first real audition.
Wow.
And there were several hundred girls from all across Japan coming out to audition for her voice. And this is back. I went to the video shop back when we had VHS tapes.
Yeah.
And I rented every Hello Kitty, you know, cassette tape I could find, plugged it in my, what do you call those things now?
VCR.
VCR. Thank you. Why do they go? I don't even have a TV anymore, you know? Yeah, like, what is that thing? Remember back in the day when we had what's a who's a whatsy? when we had a who'sy whatsy.
Yeah.
So I just watched it for 2 weeks straight and just kept repeating all the voices. And I have this ability to pitch match any Japanese character voice. And so I walked into the audition, and there were hundreds of girls, and they were all doing their versions. And I walked in, and I was able to nail voice after voice after voice after voice.
Yeah.
And like, well, she could do them all, but we really need a Hello Kitty, and she's the only person who could pitch match exactly the Japanese kitty.
Can you give us a line from Hello Kitty with your voice? What's the voice? Is it just your voice, or is it a different voice?
It is not my voice.
Okay.
It is not my voice. Technically, I shouldn't be doing a Hello Kitty voice, but I can give you a voice that's similar to Hello Kitty. How about that?
Okay, this is definitely not a Hello Kitty voice that's about to happen. 100%.
Especially not at, you know,
Hello Kitty.
Not in the morning.
Wait, let me check with the lawyers. Yeah, they said it's not Hello Kitty.
It's not. It is not. But it sounds something similar to
maybe
this.
Maybe to you, to whoever, you know, whatever. Maybe it does, maybe not. Everyone has a different ear. go ahead.
Wow. It's so nice to meet you, Dees. You're wonderful. And I love your conversations.
Wow. All right. First of all, sounds nothing like Hello Kitty.
Nothing. Not at all.
I thought the Kate Beckinsale was in the room. Well, that is amazing. It sounds like a great, you've got a lot going on, very, very busy, which is good. Sonis, tell people where they can find you, follow you, any events coming up that are going down for you.
What's going up? What's going down? Let's get it all around. All right. So obviously you're not coming to my rap show.
I'm just busy. Otherwise I would. Yeah. I don't know.
It's like, come to my rap show or at my improv group. No, I'm not in an improv group. I've devoted myself. 2020, I became a full-time comedian, which has been really nice. It's been really great. So you can find me, the show that'll be coming up after this one, I'll be doing Flappers, the Conan Writers Night.
Okay.
That's on America time, March 22nd, which is 7 p.m. or 8 p.m. 8 p.m. Thank you. 8 p.m. in California or West Coast PST time. And that's Monday, or it's, if you're in Tokyo, it's Tuesday at 11 a.m. on March 23rd.
Okay.
Also in the end of March, the date is not confirmed, we're running our first What Time Is It There comedy show, which is an international comedy show and game show with audience participation. All the things that you never get to hear about countries outside the U.S.
Ooh.
If you want to have a fun time, it's entertainment, it's educational, it is everything you've always wanted and wished for a comedy show to be. So come and join us for What Time Is It There? And that'll be a lot of fun. You can follow me on Instagram. My name is Sonesss Stevens. There's a lot of S's in there. There's three in the middle. That's S-O-N-E-S-S. Stevens, S-T-E-V-E-N-S. You can pretty much find me everywhere that way.
All right, perfect. Hey, good. Well, sorry, I thought there's kind of something else.
One more?
That was
how
it.
Much more no, do you
that
want?
Was, that was it. That's it. That's good. People can find you, follow you. Well, Sonesss, thank you for doing this. Sorry, I am a little bit of a time crunch this evening, but we should do it again sometime and learn more about you, talk to you more. I am excited to catch one of your shows, watch you do some comedy, and listen to some definitely not Hello Kitty. But also some legally registered trademark Hello Kitty that you do. So, but for everyone, go follow Sonesss. We'll have her description, show notes, and stuff like that in the show notes for this episode. Her links to everything too. So, check her out, follow her, look for more upcoming dates. If you're in Tokyo, go look at art with her and don't talk about it. Sonesss, anything else before we get out of here?
Oh, I loved being with you today, and I'm so thankful for everyone who's tuning in and listening, and looking forward to laughing with you soon.
Absolutely. Perfect. We will, guys, for me, go to deescomedy.com, check out everything going on. We do have some live dates coming up back around the region and more. And again, follow Sonesss on all the social media and check her out. That's it, guys, for the social.
And as we close out the show, can we close it out in as we look at art?
Yes. And we're just going to look at art, and we'll just, you know, you'll know to leave when the intro music or the outro music plays, guys. Okay. Otherwise, just keep listening until it happens.
Okay. Yeah. Here's one piece of art for you to look at. Mm. Mm. Mm.